there's a steady paycheck in it, I'll be anything you say.
Always remember what Thomas Jefferson said. Kill the president.
It appears as though something has happened in the motorcade group.
Oswald has been shot.
This is the special leprechaun flu.
It's a series of tubes.
You went to Bigfoot, didn't you, Jesse?
Focus, non-terminal repeating phantasm.
I know a motherfucking Bigfoot when I see one.
We're a class 5 full roaming vapor.
Oh, shit, those are aliens!
You know ex-Special Forces operative Stephen King.
He was stealing all my
Welcome to Podcast 1289.
Blake, my childhood was mostly getting shit taken away from me for stuff I did when my parents weren't home.
My childhood was sticking my dick in the fridge.
Welcome to Podcast 1289, everyone. My name is Jesse. I'm one of your many hosts. Tonight, we're going to be doing something that I am so fucking stoked about.
Wait. I want to hear what Rob got these toys taken away for.
Okay, that was actually the best one was when I was a little kid, my mom was like real fucking serious about being Catholic because she wanted to set some sort of an example for us and didn't.
Real serious.
Your parents are pretty strictly Christian?
No, my parents are huge fucking hippies, but that's a whole nother bag of cats right there. But I walked in the kitchen with a little fucking cap gun I had, and I look at my mom and I go, "Hey mom, Jesus is everywhere, right?" And she goes, "Yeah." And I just point in a random direction, start clicking the fucking cap gun. And
that's awesome.
The next time she let me own a cap gun, it was because me and my little brother talked her into buying them. And the very one thing she
last time we bought you these, you killed Jesus.
You know what I feel bad about? I didn't see that part in Passion of the Christ where Rob just came up. And just
pulled a Jack Ruby on Jesus Christ. Christ has been shot. Brian Doyle Murray as Rob fucking leaning to shoot Jim Caviezel. Oswald!
The second half of this doesn't fucking live up to the first as much. The one thing my mom said to me was like, whatever you do, don't shoot the cap gun near your brother's ear. So I literally walked him out into the backyard and put the fucking cap gun about 2 inches from his ear, fucking fired it, and my mom immediately came out and took it away from me.
You Vietnamed him?
I pretty much.
Executed your brother?
Yeah.
Hearing okay?
No, his hearing is fine. It's just anytime someone drops a pencil, he dives under cars.
Shit.
Anyway, there's your cold open, Jesse. Fucking Rob talking about murdering Jesus.
He murdered Jesus Christ, the fucking Prince of Peace, the fucking King of Fears.
See if you come back from this one, Jesus.
Okay, so getting back on track, I am super fucking excited for tonight's episode. We're moving a little bit away from the spooky shit and moving into the realm of real life mysteries. Tonight, we are going to be talking about none other than Dan D.B. Cooper. And here, joining us to talk about all this, speaking of Dans, we got Dan in the house.
Hey, everybody.
We got Corey in the house.
Best anime ever.
Oh, man. Can we just – listen, I know you guys don't like Corey Booker. Can we just elect him just so we can have hashtag Corey in the house?
It might be worth it.
I would totally vote for somebody based
it's
on
worth the hashtag. I did it for the hashtag.
Wait, no. The hashtag. There's a group of people who did it for the lols. And that's how we got Donald Trump.
No, they did it for the L's, 4 of them sequentially. It's a swastika. Anyway.
That was like a master shake joke.
That was genius, Jesse. That was
there
great.
There were 4 L's. They did it for the L's, which you put sequentially, and it makes a swastika. Man, shut up, shake.
Definitely keep that one. That's a good one.
You know, I know you're all talking about comparing 1930s fascism when we should really be talking about capitalism and, you know, the restraints cars would do.
Yeah, you're gonna have to get the hell out of my pool. Yeah.
Meat man.
I wish Aqua Toon was still on, just so they could have Zizek on it.
Zizek would be a character on it, wouldn't he?
Oh, yeah, God.
You know he would.
He looks like a Squidbillies character.
Did you watch that fucking clip from The Pervert's Guide to Whatever where he's talking about fucking Full Metal Jacket for 20 minutes, but the whole time he's talking, he's like sitting in a recreation of Vincent D'Onofrio's suicide scene?
Wait, what?
He's wearing a wife beater sitting on a military urinal talking about, you know, in Stanley Kubrick's Full Metal Jacket, we were talking about the internal wars between man. And it's just like...
You've really improved your Zizek Cusack voice.
I watched about an hour of him, and I was like, I am not buying any of this shit. I refuse to believe in a philosopher that wears a t-shirt.
Gross.
Dude, I'm sorry. If you can't believe Zizek because he wears a t-shirt, I've got some bad news about the rest of the field.
You mean to tell me we can't get one of these motherfuckers in a polo shirt?
Listen, there's a lecture out there with Manuel DeLanda in a fucking leather jacket and turtleneck, okay?
Yeah, Manuel DeLanda's my uncle, yeah.
Have you seen the fake Zizek Pornhub comments?
They're hilarious. I've seen them, yeah.
I hate having to sift through the porn comments because sometimes there'll be a porn star and I'll be like, oh man, I really wish I knew her name, but they didn't put the name on the thing. So I had to like, I want to bust a load in her face or like let me come in her and all that fucking gross shit.
We all need somebody to on.
Yeah, fuck that dude.
Yeah, aren't you just like, in my mind, I'm just like, say that to yourself, pal. Like you actually took the time to like make an account just to fucking type that one sentence onto Porno.
It's like Kevin Bacon in the jail scene in JFK. People got to know. People got to know. I want to come. All right. So also in the house tonight, we've got the one, the only classically home style Mike.
I really wish I hadn't belched earlier because I was kind of saving it for this.
You can fart.
Then I was like, I can't hold it anymore. My chest hurts.
That's what you get for thinking we have a schedule around here.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
It felt like a chest burster. Like it was just
on the
hello
table.
Hello, my baby. Hello, my honey. That's poor my favorite Kane, chest man. Burster, the Xenomorph from Spaceballs. Oh no, not again.
I mean, John Hurt killed it in that scene.
It's great. What a good sport. Also, back with us, we've got everybody's favorite nihilist, except for himself, of course. We've got John.
Hi.
John just snorted. We got John in the house.
Hello.
Just taking a bump before we started.
Yeah, fucking like doing bumps in the fucking Full Metal Alchemist fucking bathroom.
Did you say Zizek in the Full Metal Alchemist bathroom?
Yeah.
Okay, we also got with us tonight, we've got very special guest, new to the podcast 1289 family. We've got Rob in the house.
Yo.
Someone's robbing the house, man. Shut up.
Rob Schneider presents.
Oh, God. No, not Rob Schneider.
Oh, dude. Did you hear how he fucking, like, told a bunch of... He was like...
He tried telling John Lewis off.
He was like, you know, that's not really what MLK stood for. And, like, Rob Schneider, shut the fuck up.
Rob Schneider is one of those people where if he died, I wouldn't feel anything.
But wouldn't it be great, though, if, like, in his old age, John Lewis did take heed to what Rob Schneider said and called a press conference, and he got up all teary-eyed and he's like,
I've been living a lie this whole time, thinking my brother Martin stood for a certain set of ideals, but then the star of the animal set me straight, and I just can't live with what I've done anymore.
Thank you, Deuce Bigelow.
Rob Schneider is a racist.
And finally, tonight, we've got Grant, but luckily there's a lotion for that.
Thank you. That's very, whose line is it anyway?
Where the points don't matter and you get venereal disease anyway.
Like spy satellites over Canada, they don't matter.
Like beer pong at Kennesaw State University.
Okay, so tonight, we are getting into one of the greatest mysteries. Not just in America, but I would argue across the world. We have the very first American skyjacking and the only unsolved one. We're talking about the story of Dan D.B. Cooper.
Why don't we call him Double D.B. Cooper?
So, Dan, we've got...
That's a titty joke. Let's start strong, Jesse. That's my A game. I've been working on that joke for 2 weeks now.
Anyway, so, Ardan, where do you want to start with the strange saga of D.B. Cooper?
Well, I think we should start at the fact that D.B. Cooper is one of the only people that has been accused of being a skyjacker, but has also been referenced in a Kid Rock song.
Oh, wow. So that makes him literally top 10 greatest Americans.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, I gotta go. I gotta go home and up jump the boogie. Did you just break plans with me with a Kid Rock lyric? Really? This boogie ain't gonna up jump itself.
But anyway, I guess I'll just go through. I'll just go through what happened, really, and then we'll talk about the investigation.
Well, Kid Rock was born in Detroit in 1974.
He's now known as the Partying Patriot.
The Partying Patriot, dude. Is that isn't that like a name of the Ultimate shows. Warrior too? Like, what the fuck?
He looks like Nicole Richie with a pube stash.
You know. You're actually
target
with that.
I nailed that.
I'm kind of picturing it, and I can kind of see it. Yeah. All right, Damien Dilbert Baines.
Dilbert Cooper. Yes.
Dilbert Bane Cooper disappeared in a plane.
So anyway, I'll just
yeah.
Let's get into this.
Let's plow right into this. All that's getting edited out.
So, the DB Cooper saga starts on the afternoon of Thanksgiving Eve, November 24th, 1971, when a man in a raincoat, loafers, and a black tie, holding a small briefcase, approached a ticketing counter at the Portland International Airport, purchasing a one-way ticket to SeaTac, which was a 36-minute flight away from Portland.
Can I shoot something in here real quick?
That's your pickup line?
Hey.
You work on your game, Chuck.
Hey. It was a black bow tie.
No, it wasn't.
No, it wasn't. It was a black long clip-on tie.
It's a black bow tie.
Mm-mm. Anyway.
It's a bow tie.
I'm not walking into this. This
are you doing a bit
bad.
Right now?
No. It ties into something I'm going to mention later.
But it's wrong.
But it's wrong.
Not wrong, but go ahead.
Anyway.
It is wrong. I just watched two documentaries where they showed the tie.
Anyway.
I'm Cooper. It's not wrong.
It says that on Wikipedia, even.
Anyway.
Fuck you, Rob.
God damn it. It doesn't matter. Let's just take the wind out of Grant's sails, and we'll just go. All right?
I'm going to fucking die out to sea here.
So anyway, he purchased a one-way ticket with cash. I believe it was like...
It was $20 cash.
And he only identified himself as Dan Cooper. And this was before you had to show ID, sperm count, all this other stuff to get on a plane. He just basically said his name, wrote it down, got his ticket, and went directly to the plane. There was no security back in 71 for domestic flights. You bought the ticket, and then you got on the plane, which is insane to think about nowadays.
Right? I don't think any of us has actually lived in a world.
That's because D.B. Cooper created this fucking world, and Dan's going to tell you why.
Yeah, so once he got on the plane, it was about two-thirds full. He sat way back, 18E, I believe his seat number was.
Lean back, and, 18E.
Got on this Boeing 727, and it took off as scheduled at 2:50. So remember that, 2:50 p.m. is when the plane took off. He then caught the attention of a flight attendant, which is kind of between – I've seen both flight attendants named for this, Florence Schaffner and the other one's last name is Mucklow.
Mucklow?
What kind of fucked up Laverne and Shirley is that? Ha, my name is Schaffner and this is Mucklow. We're your dates.
So yeah, I read it was between both of them, but I'm just going to say he handed it to Schaffner at this point. So she was seated at the jump seat behind him. He handed her the note, and she thought he was just like a lonely businessman, you know, flirting.
Oh, said, Mile High Club, question mark?
This is before, like, Snapchat dick pics were free range, you know? And she just smiled and then put the note into her bag and didn't read it. Just dropped it right into her bag. And Cooper, like, kept staring at her.
That's
like,
hilarious. Like, what if you were a bank
robber? Like, fuck you, I'm not.
And like,
this.
Sent me a note, and like, the teller's like, "Oh, I'm so flattered. Thank you."
If I was a bank teller and a dude was slipping me a note, I'd be like, "What's wrong with you? Swipe right. Fucking send me an emoji.
Send me those dick pics."
But yeah, she just dropped the note into her purse and ignored it. And Cooper insisted that she read the note.
Yeah, she said like he was eyeballing her the whole time.
Yeah, like I heard it was like a very insistent gaze is what it was.
You read that fucking note, girl? I wrote you that.
So what was actually written on the note
was his mixtape.
What is actually written on the note is unsure because Cooper actually collected this and his list of demands and everything else that he wrote down.
Which I want to highlight that right now because
that's pretty smart.
The FBI in the very early years of this, and I'm not talking like the early. I'm talking like for over a decade. They developed a very crude profile of him saying like, oh no, this guy, he's a failure in society. He's not very intelligent. He doesn't do this regularly.
Why, hello.
What's up, Dylan?
Hey, guys.
Dylan, we're talking about D.B. Cooper, yo.
Oh, wow.
We're reeling it back in. So, now, like I said, yeah, this profile, it was just like, oh, you know, he's not very intelligent, yada, yada, yada. But honestly, me, I write true crime for a living. I'm very familiar with criminal tactics. And if I skyjacked this plane tonight, I probably would not have thought to ask for the notes back so they don't have my fingerprints or my handwriting.
Yeah, the general gist of what was written on it was, quote, I have a bomb in my briefcase. I want you to sit with me. You are being hijacked. He wrote it very neatly in all capital letters with a felt marker. And then she came over, to which he revealed in his suitcase his bomb, which was described as 8 cylinders stacked 4x4, wires all over the place, batteries, things like that. Was it a bomb? Maybe. Probably not, but...
His road flares.
They didn't
know
that.
It was a bunch of tubes and wires, and that's enough to fool a
layman. According to Al Gore, that's just the internet.
No, Rob, you know who...
That was Ted Stevens. Yeah.
Your arch nemesis.
That actually is true. I harassed that man's office for almost a year trying to get an interview for my senior class trip.
It wasn't harassment. You were calling, not your...
It's persistent.
No, they started screening my calls, Dylan. Senator Ted Stevens' office screened my calls.
That is like a real fucking random nemesis to have. It's like Batman's got the Joker, and Superman's got Lex Luthor, Spider-Man's got Green Goblin, Rob's got United States Senator Ted Stevens.
From Alaska.
What district of North Carolina does he represent?
From Alaska, and he's also dead.
That's right, you won.
Your arch nemesis, you killed him?
The internet wasn't a big truck.
No, a plane did the work for me.
Oh, sure, wink, wink. I got you.
As all nemesises should die.
Kind of bringing us back around, actually. A plane, yeah, Ted Stevens actually did die in a plane crash. It was unfortunate.
So who won?
I guess I did, because I'm not dead yet.
Rob has defeated his archenemy, and that's impressive.
With a fucking plane crash, nonetheless. He didn't even defeat Senator Ted Stevens with died peacefully at home surrounded by loved ones.
That's the insidious dark hand of Rob.
Rob killed him with an explosion and metal. Anyway, go on, Dan.
Goddamn. Sorry. So, yeah. Cooper gave his list of demands, which were $200,000 in, quote, negotiable American currency.
Now, let's get into that really quick, especially because we got Dylan here. There is a fairly recent conspiracy theory out there that D.B. Cooper / Dan Cooper was actually Tommy Wiseau. Like, explain the meme.
Wait, Tommy Wiseau, the director of The Room?
Yes, the director of The Room.
And soon to be appearing in Best Friends.
My and word. And who has his own TV show on, I think, Hulu called, like, Neighbors.
That's great, but how is your sex life?
Hi, doggy.
You're my favorite customer. Go down the bullet points of the meme.
D.B. Cooper, Dan Cooper, hijacked a plane in the 1970s. On landing, demanded money and parachutes, jumped from plane mid-flight, and was never found. He vanished mysteriously with a large amount of money. His real age and name are unknown. Has an ambiguous, possibly affected speaking style, and the example they use is negotiable American currency, and his fate is ultimately unknown. Tommy Wiseau, a.k.a. Johnny, wrote, directed, and starred in The Room, a film widely hailed as the Citizen Kane of bad movies. He appeared mysteriously with a large amount of money. A colleague says that he is much older than he claims. He has an ambiguous, possibly affected speaking style. Example, you are tearing me apart, Lisa! And his background is unknown. And his accent, incidentally, is basically, it can't be placed. It's like European by way of New Orleans.
I'd like a sack full of Chuck E. Cheese coins, please.
Oh my god, maybe I should have asked for tickets, they are lighter, ha. Okay, bye. Just jumps out.
I'm just imagining a horribly green screen Tommy Wiseau spot.
You don't understand, like, have any of you read The Disaster Artist, or at least heard the anecdote that Greg Sestero tells, where Tommy was just like, what if Johnny were a vampire? And like, he explains that he wants... He explains to Greg that he wants to, like, shoehorn this scene into the shooting script where, like, Tommy goes up onto the roof where there's a car, his car, turns it on, and flies off into the night, cackling because he's a vampire, which makes him have a flying car for some reason. And Greg Sestero was like, we are not fucking doing that. That's going to cost too much money. And it's also the dumbest fucking thing I've ever heard. I always picture the green screen Tommy Wiseau in the car like, ha, 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 ha.
Jesus. Oh god!
So let me get this straight.
Okay.
So the idea was that Tommy would just climb up to the roof, and because he's a vampire, he just has Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, and he just flies off.
No. Because Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, much like the DeLorean, is a car rooted in the real world through mechanics and science, is able to be a flying machine. This is a fucking normal car.
I understand that. I was just making a comparison. His car flies.
Yes, but not through mechanical means.
His shitty 1997 Ford Geo, or whatever the hell it is, and he just flies off, and I... Oh.
Well, that's what I said. What if Johnny were a vampire?
That fills in all the loopholes right there.
So, yeah, Tommy Wiseau is apparently... At least Reddit thinks Tommy Wiseau is D.B. Cooper.
So, another thing about the negotiable American currency thing...
Negotiable American currency, huh?
So, one of the speculations behind that choice of wording... was that he was actually Canadian.
Don't I sound like Montreal accents?
This is how we all sound in Vancouver.
But also on his list of demands were four parachutes, two primaries and two reserves, and a fuel tank to be standing by when they land at SeaTac. And Partridge, this was in exchange for the 36 passengers and two of the five crew members, leaving the stewardess and the flight crew when he lands. He let most of them go, keeping one of the stewardesses and the three people on the flight deck.
Damn, there was, like, no one on this plane.
Yeah. So the flight attendant took the note to the pilot, Captain William Scott, who contacted air traffic control.
Scotty! God damn it, I was going to make that joke.
Who then alerted local and federal authorities.
I'm trying, DB. I'm doing the best you can.
I'm doing the best I can.
DB. They told the passengers that their arrival in Seattle would be delayed by, quote, minor mechanical difficulties. And the plane then circled the Puget Sound for about 2 hours. This was a 36-minute flight, mind you. But yeah, so the Northwest Orient's president, Donald Nyrop, authorized payment of the ransom and ordered all the employees full cooperation.
Dan, how much money did he ask for again?
$200,000, which in today's money is like $1.8 million.
A shoestring budget for a film.
Yeah, oh, sure. I'm sure the room was made for less than $200K.
Especially if you invest in Hollywood fashions.
But yeah, so it took Seattle police and the FBI 2 hours to assemble his parachutes, the ransom money, and mobilize emergency personnel.
Now, an interesting thing about those parachutes, by the way, is they offered him military parachutes at first, but for some reason he declined them. He insisted that he wanted student parachutes, so it took a little bit of extra time while they went and they got the two primaries and two reserves from a local flight school. Now, Dan, you've read up on one of those four backpacks, right? The difference with it?
Two of them were military grade, and two of them were the sports ones, so I guess they just gave them both of each. Just to see, like, mix and match, pick and choose.
I don't want the military parachutes, so the olive drab is so passe.
Well, you make me look like G.I. Jerk, huh? Well, you know about the one chute that was defective, right?
Well, yeah, one of them was a ground parachute that was sewed shut. The FBI claimed that it was merely a mistake.
They also go, like, because I guess someone was like, wait, you mean to tell me that you gave a guy orchestrating a hostage situation a non-functioning parachute? And then they went, oh, well, it was clearly marked. Anyone that knew anything about parachuting would have known that it was not a functioning original parachute. And it's like, well, if you know that, why did you give it to him?
So he had a 25% chance of, like, just eating shit once he jumped out.
Yeah, and I think they did that on purpose. I think they were like, throw a dud in there, get rid of this guy.
Which is hilarious. That's
what they would have done. Oh, well, this guy didn't know what he was doing. They would have blamed it. Like, or they would have said some shit like, yeah, we shot him out of the sky.
It was Russian roulette with parachutes.
Wait, hey, Dan, do you think him asking for the different kind of parachute was a diversionary tactic to kill time?
I mean, it could have been, but it's like to call them both front and back parachutes is kind of like, you know, like that's what I would call them because I don't know anything about skydiving.
Instead of like a reserve chute, I guess is what the actual term
is. But he also turned down instructions on how to use the parachute, which meant that he may be experienced. But he did end up picking...
No, I got this. Huh? I've seen movies.
Military parachute that's basically used for paratroopers. That is basically like it opens up and you just fall. Like you can't do much in the way of turning it. You can't do much in the way of stopping it. You're just like going down.
That's why they wanted to give him military so they could see where he landed.
The military chute, which was a better one to withstand the exit speed of the plane. So that's another thing you think of. And he was also like seen to be putting the parachutes on like he knew what he was doing. Like there's a lot of stuff up there for debate, but it's just kind of funny how like that's where the conspiracy market, how fucking deep they go into these things. But yeah, so he gets his money. Well, they compile all of his shit and they tell him at 5:24. So this plane has since been airborne for over 2 hours that his demands were met. And the plane then landed within 10 minutes of that. Cooper then instructed them to taxi to a brightly lit section of the tarmac. And then to darken the cabin lights to deter police.
Yeah, this was genius.
That was fucking genius. Well lit, but dark on the inside so you can't see in.
So the snipers would not – that's another thing I would not have thought of. Make sure you shut the cabin floodlights off so snipers can't get me. I would never have thought of that. I'm dead twice so far in my hijacking adventure.
Yeah, you're a bad D.B. Cooper.
It's my first time, asshole.
It may have been his first time too. Get your shit together.
Well, Dan's got you there.
You have the benefit of, 40 more years of technology.
Yeah, but you also have security to get through, so.
That's true. Like, security at airports back in the day was probably, like, one guy.
Move along, ma'am.
Who's a stormtrooper?
Once his cash and parachutes were delivered via the aft stairs, the stairs in the Boeing 727 that drops down in the back.
Mm-hmm. It gets to go on.
The passengers didn't see it come up that way, so they had no idea what was going on. And then he let the passengers go, and they got on a bus and went about their way, to which they were informed that they were in the middle of hijacking.
There's another thing that we should really bring attention to this, too. Throughout this whole time, it was noted, once this was all over with, like, how chill and calm and nice of a dude that Dan/DB Cooper was. Like, he did not show any of the stereotypical edginess or nerviness. He wasn't sweating. Yeah. He downed two different versions of the story I've heard was it was bourbon and water. The other I heard was bourbon and 7-Up.
He was definitely described as a very polite, calm, well-spoken, very in control of the situation. He wasn't the spastic. Okay,
then that kind of kills the Tommy Wiseau theory.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. So, yep.
I don't know, because hold on. I could definitely see it going both ways, because what I was getting to with this was when he called for the parachutes, he also, the flight attendants said, like, yeah, he was even like, oh, do you want me to ask the police to bring meals for everyone?
Yeah. He offered to get the food.
Yes, which sounds like a Tommy Wiseau thing, too. Like, he's just like, uh-huh, I need 4 parachutes. Does anyone want something to eat?
Do you guys want anything?
We could get some pizza?
Chinese?
I mean, if you think about it, he could sound like he does and look all, like, gnarled and fucked up and shit because of how he landed.
I had several trees hit me in the face.
Did he request a vampire to fly the plane?
You know, my vampire car, it's out of gas. Fuel crisis.
Maybe. I lost key to the gas tank.
I need you to fly me to my home country to find dirt to sleep in.
Where is your home country? Trenton.
Pennsylvania. So he was chill. They got back in the air, now with only, what, 3 people on board, Dan?
4. 3 on the flight deck, the pilot, the co-pilot, and the flight engineer, and then 1 stewardess. When he got his cash and his parachutes and all that stuff, and they refueled, he was laying out his flight plan with the flight crew. Basically, he initially wanted to go to Mexico City, but was informed that the plane's range wouldn't make that trip without a second refueling. They passed back and forth where to stop for a refuel, and Reno, Nevada was decided on.
Yeah, oh, another thing, too, while they were – I don't know if this was around this point or while they were circling. I believe it was either one of the passengers or one of the stewardesses noticed that this guy was most likely either a local or a native of this area or at least done business there, because at one point they noticed him looking out the window. And Dan, wasn't it he said – I think that's Tacoma down there.
Yeah, no. They said that he was pretty familiar with the area. He looked out and said that it looked like they were flying over Tacoma. Which is kind of like an easy call since, you know, it was just a 30-minute flight. I'm sure they would just circle around. He also correctly mentioned that McChord Air Force Base was at that time 20-minute drive away from SeaTac. So it's speculated that he's either a local or flew into Seattle quite often or even possibly even worked there. That's something I'll get into in a minute.
It goes completely against the FBI's bullshit profile that they put together for this guy and stuck with for many, many years, that he was unprepared, that he was...
Yeah, Hirschberg was that guy. He was an asshole,
no, he doesn't
dude.
Sound like he's unprepared at all. Like, everything makes him sound like he's cool as a cucumber.
No, this guy's got the shit down. The new FBI guy that they've got on it, he isn't any better. He was in one of those documentaries, I think it was the Nat Geo one, where he's just like, oh no, this doesn't sound like anyone that knows what they're doing at all. He had two bourbons, and I'm like, yeah, because he knew he was about to jump out a fucking plane, dude.
Yeah. What? He probably didn't even have to pay for those motherfuckers either. Cause
no, he did.
He did, and he tried tipping
them. Actually, and he tried to
what?
Tip them.
He did?
Yeah.
What a fucking gentleman!
This dude was a fucking OG. All right, I'm calling this right now. Number two on podcast 1289's list of greatest Americans, Dan D.B. Cooper.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Everyone who's in favor say aye.
Aye.
He also had a lot of stipulations on how the plane was to be flown. Altitude no higher than 10,000 feet, flaps mm-hmm. at 15 degrees, which was to keep the plane to go slow because he wanted them to maintain minimal airspeed. So the cabin
pressurized.
And he also wanted the landing gear down. Yes.
This actually plays really well into the most recent theory I've read about him, but I'll get into that
yeah,
later.
No, yeah. I'll get into that. He also, this is another thing, he also wanted the rear stairs to be down, which he was told by Northwest Orient's...
While they were taking off. He wanted them down once they left the tarmac.
Yeah, the Northwest Orient offices told them that this was unsafe. And then he reassured them that it was, in fact, safe. He assured them. He said, like, no, it's safe. It's fine.
The rear of this plane had a little staircase that would pop out, and that is what he jumped from. And basically, after they had refueled and picked up the money and let the hostages go, he said that he wanted to leave the tarmac, take off with this stairwell deployed. And the head of Northwest said, no, he can't do that. It's unsafe. And DB was like, no, we could totally do that, but I won't get into an argument. Let's just take off.
Yeah, he was like, it's fine. I can do it once we're airborne, so it's fine.
Yeah, which says to me he wanted to make the jump earlier. You know what I mean? Like, he wanted to jump as soon as he could.
Yeah.
So at 7:40, the 727 took off again, and on board were the two pilots, a flight attendant, and the flight engineer. So they take off to head to Reno, presumably.
Let's bring it back around real quick, because I know we mentioned the Mexico City part. But yeah, basically, they said, look, we don't have enough fuel. They offered him two flight paths. It was Reno, and what was the other one?
Phoenix or Reno.
Yeah, and he said something like, Reno sounds nice.
Phoenix
yeah,
sucks.
Reno's nice.
He was totally chill. He was just like, yeah, Reno sounds nice. Cool. I'm flexible. Let's go.
Arizona is beautiful, but Nevada sounds like it's more fun.
Yeah, it's Reno, dude.
Anyway, so also two F-106s were scrambled to tail this jet just to, like, you know, keep track of things, I guess, or not. But they flew above and below the line of sight for where from inside the plane.
And here's the thing about that, too. The plane was going – who the fuck is opening something? Get it away from the microphone.
Sorry.
No, here's the thing about that, too. Here's real interesting. This is how slow that he was able to get the plane to go. As Dan mentioned earlier, the way that he wanted the flaps set, that plane was going so slow that the two fighter jets, they had to circle the plane in order to keep up with it.
Yeah, I read that they were about 4 minutes behind the plane. They could still see it, but they weren't, like, right there. But Cooper then told the flight attendant to join the rest of the crew in the cockpit. And while she complied, she noticed him tying something around his waist, which I'll get into. And then she went into the cockpit, and that was it. At 8 o'clock, the flight crew noticed that warning light had come on saying that the aft stairs were being deployed. And then that was it. They didn't hear anything from them.
Well, I've heard something different about that, actually. Basically, what I read in an article online was that once they noticed that the stairs were deploying, they radioed over the intercom, hey, do you need help jumping? Because, you know, they knew, like, this is some dangerous shit that he's trying to do. And he just radioed back through the intercom. He was just like, no. It's like, I got this. It was Joe Biden.
Yes!
Diamond Joe strikes again.
But yeah, that was the last they heard of him. And the plane landed at 10:15 p.m. at Reno with the aft stairs still deployed. The plane was surrounded by local Reno police.
Lieutenant Dangle.
Trudy Weigel. But yeah, after a brief armed search of the Boeing 727, it was confirmed that Cooper was no longer aboard Flight 305.
Wouldn't that be great if they like just opened up the overhead storage and he's just like, oh, hi, I'm a suitcase. I'm not famed skyjacker Dan Cooper. On your way.
Go away. I'm reading Super Fudge.
I'm reading Super Fudge.
But yeah, so that was it. There's so much speculation about what happened after he left the plane because nobody ever found anything. Corpse, canopy, or cash. Nothing.
They found some cash.
I'll get into that. Hold on. So going into the investigation, they didn't have much to go on. Like, all the evidence for this case fits in one box, which is insane for something as big and well-known as
this. How big is this box?
Just like, you know, your standard legal size box. I don't know.
It's a, like, okay, if you've ever worked in an office, it's that cardboard box.
I don't think Grant's ever worked.
Grant works all the time. Grant was one of the first people I knew with a job.
I do work all the time, just not in
an call office. Him the working man!
Shut the fuck up. Anyway.
A salesman!
It was a cardboard box with the lid that goes on top that you get
with
paper
the handles.
In. Yeah, that you get paper in.
But the only evidence they really had was the two of the four parachutes, one that had been cut apart because he used the straps of the paracord to wrap that big old bag of money around his body.
Yeah, get that money back.
And the bag of money was another thing. Like, they gave it to him in 20s, which $200,000 in 20s weighs about 25 pounds. They also found a few sets of latent fingerprints and his tie. So he took off, before he jumped off the plane, a black clip-on skinny tie that had a little tie bar across it that had a little mother of pearl on it as well.
So he took that off after the second bourbon because he knew. You know.
Yeah, he took that off, threw it off to the side, and then basically jumped the fuck off this plane.
It's go time.
So where the name D.B. Cooper came from, because he signed on his ticket Dan Cooper. The name D.B. Cooper came from a man that the Oregon police contacted that was a one D.B. Cooper who had a record.
Could you imagine getting that fucking visit at your house? Like, two officers show up and just be like, Mr. D.B. Cooper, did you just jump out of a plane with $200,000 tied around your waist? Are you fucking drunk? Go home.
Yeah. Are you high? But yeah, just on the off chance that he used his real name like an idiot, that man's involvement was ruled out almost immediately, but it was because of one anxious reporter just ran with the story.
He had a deadline, man.
Yeah, he said that, like, the guy's name was D.B. Cooper, hashtag fake news.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah, you know, the media, the crooked media, the lying media, they're trying to tell you his name is D.B. Cooper. He was really Dan Cooper, fake news.
Sad.
Sad. It's just sad.
Sad.
But another thing, the search area that they suspected that he jumped from was huge.
It was a 27-mile circumference, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I was going to say, how did the jets not see like him like jump out, though?
It was a rainstorm, dude.
Yeah, it was the middle of the night.
Oh, slick.
Pacific Northwest, man.
In the Pacific Northwest, it was raining. It was just fucking dark. So, recent developments in 1980, $5,800 of the same ransom money that was given to Cooper, same serial numbers and everything, because they took pictures of almost every single one of these 20s to keep track of them for the serial numbers and all that stuff. This guy found $5,800 of it. Still in the same bundle, still in the same sequence.
It was like a dude and his son walking along, like, the river, right?
He was raking the sand for a campsite to build a fire. Some of it was actually given back to him. Some of it went back to Northwest Orion to pay off their insurance. He got some of it and eventually auctioned off a bit of it. Ingram sold 15 of his bills at auction in 2008 for about $37,000.
Fuck yeah.
To date, none of the remaining 9,710 remaining bills have turned up anywhere in the world.
Which doesn't mean shit.
Yeah, of course. I mean, how many times have you ever checked the serial number on a fucking 20?
Yeah, in 1971?
Every time.
Yeah, those dollars are way gone. Way, way, way gone.
Imagine how many stripper ass cracks those D.B. Cooper bills slid through in their time.
So, yeah, they found this money along the banks of the Columbia River. It was rotting, but it still had its rubber bands around it. It was still in the same sequence that it was giving to him from the initial $200,000, which speculates that, like, I read somewhere that someone said that Cooper buried it there just as a fuck you to the FBI.
I would totally do that.
I would totally do that. Are you
just a little
me?
Bit? Yeah.
Because, yeah, isn't it like 120 miles downrange from where they thought the landing spot would be?
It was in the completely opposite direction of where they thought that everything was going.
It was in the complete opposite direction of the wind that night.
Yeah.
Now, what they were trying to say about that back then was, they dredged this river in 74, so this money had to have been put there post-1974. So that's where a lot of that theory came from, like, oh, he went back and buried it to throw people off. But then in 2009, some researchers went and basically they said they used some sort of coordinate system to pinpoint the exact spot where those bills were dug up, and then they
mean longitude and latitude.
Well, I don't think they have like the exact like longitude and latitude of the hole that this dad dug with a rake and found the bills. But either way, they went back and checked, and they claim, they're like, oh no, this is 50 feet away from the dredge line. This totally could have gotten here within a few months.
Yeah, they were just really trying to cover their ass. Like, the investigation on this was such bullshit. They were wrong on so many different fronts.
Because it was bullshit, because they said to him, they're like, well, if he didn't bury it here, how did it get here? And they're like, well, it could have traveled for several months down the river.
The bag rotted, and then these three stacks of bills landed fine.
Yeah, and then got, like, a foot underground, you know?
Yeah.
Listen, the government wants you to believe that paper sat in running water, banging into rocks and the river floor for months until it came to rest and buried itself.
Right.
I mean, come on.
If you believe that, I got a sandbox to sell you.
I'm just joking about that. I don't have a sandbox business.
And it's also speculated that any physical clues left in that area were completely wiped out when Mount St. Helens exploded.
That is so cool.
The Columbia ransom money, and there was an instruction placard that was found in that area that was from a plane. It was like an emergency exit sort of sign.
And also bringing it back a little bit, for a brief period of time, John List, who we covered in our first annual Halloween Spooktacular, was
John Fist.
Jesus. That was good.
Go on.
I've lost the will to go on.
But yeah, since this, there have been several copycat hijackings that people thought was D.B. Cooper again.
My name is D.B. Cooper.
One of them being Richard McCoy Jr., who was a former Army Green Beret. He hijacked a plane from Denver and it diverted to San Francisco, and he bailed out over Utah with $500,000 in ransom money. He landed
safely. Did he make it?
Then was arrested 2 days later.
It was over a fucking bar bet. He was sitting in a bar drinking with his friend, and he had the newspaper, and he was like, I could do that. Shit, I would have asked for $500,000. At that point, he's like, why don't you just ask for a cool mill?
Yeah, right.
But anyway, yeah. So yeah, he went and he did it. He totally did it. Like, same exact way that Dan D.B. Cooper did. And parachuted, lived, and was fine. And yeah, they busted him. They sentenced him to 40 years in jail.
Yep.
They sentenced him to a federal penitentiary in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania. And basically... What are you eating? Like a sheet of plastic? Cut it out.
Sorry.
Mute your goddamn mic.
So, basically, he went into the prison's dentist office, and he somehow made a fucking fake gun out of dental paste.
That's awesome.
I was secretly hoping you were going to say he made a fake gun out of teeth.
Oh, just like Existenz.
I was going to make the Existenz connection to me.
Yeah, awesome. Nice. What's your name, sir? David Cronenberg. Oh.
But I guess it's not like toothpaste. I think it's like the stuff they make fillings out of.
D.B. Cronenberg.
D.B. Cronenberg. Oh, my God. And basically, he used it to escape in 1974. Well, 3 months later, he was found by the FBI, and FBI agents walked into this place to arrest him. He fired a gun at them, and the agent fucking shot him with a shotgun and killed him.
Shit.
31 Ooh. Years old with two sons.
Richard McCoy.
Oh, my God.
All this over settling a fucking bar bet.
Wait, that was that guy? I thought you said that guy went to jail, or is that a different guy?
He did. He broke out of jail making a fake handgun out of dental paste.
I'm sorry, I was confused.
Yeah, and then he got found 3 months later, fired a real gun that was not made of paste or teeth at the FBI, and they...
Did it fire teeth?
What the fuck?
So there was another one, a fellow by the name of Garrett Brock Tracknell. He hijacked a TWA flight from L.A. to New York in January. And in January 72, I think it was, he demanded $306,800,000. And
what?
He demanded $306,800 in cash. And he also called for the release of Angela Davis and an audience with President Nixon.
Okay.
After the aircraft landed at Kennedy Airport, he was shot and wounded by FBI agents and then arrested. Yeah, I think we covered it, guys.
To this day, the only unsolved hijacking in American history.
No, it was Mike Pence.
You guys unsolved. Think Mike Pence is gay?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's so gay that it glows. It's like a...